Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
The dog needs to be peeing, Josh. Let the dog be comfortable peeing.
Outside! It needs to pee outside. That's where dog pee goes, Matt.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Just when you think you're safe from a random slap in the face of Chiefs news, they do occasionally swoop in. We'll talk about some of that here momentarily with our friend Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Derrick and, again, read all of his work on Chiefs Digest. Matt, before we get to any of that, I just wanted to have another check-in on our current relationship with the Wordle franchises. We've talked about last week, you kind of getting back on the horse. We both took an L in Octortle today. How are you feeling right now about the word game empire?
Yeah, today was a rough one. You just absolutely dominated me across the board. Izzy the cat is being sick right now behind me.
Oh no!
So if you hear anything in the background, that is Izzy the cat.
Can we mic up Izzy for a second and see what Izzy... Could Izzy give her quick thoughts on the Phoenix Suns Game 7 performance?
Let's go live to Izzy right now. And she stopped and is now looking at me.
Well, that, you know, still not a bad assessment of what the Suns did to me last night, so...
Now I found out how to get Izzy to not throw up on the rug, though, is put her on the radio.
Just stick your phone up and see if she gets confused. I think that's probably pretty good.
Got something here.
I also think I might have heard a very faint noise in the background while you were silent before informing us of that. So if we really amplify that after the fact, we might be able to get evidence of Izzy being sick on the radio. That's just a thing cats do all the time, though, right? Like,
you know, Izzy is masterful at being sick without actually producing anything. I will say, you know, most of the time when she throws up, it's because she eats too fast, because she just loves her crunchy food and she swallows it rather than chewing it. And then she immediately throws up. Most of the time when she gets these little, you know, the hair balls and everything like that, little fur balls, she just coughs and wheezes a little bit, but never actually produces a fur ball. So.
What an incredible creature!
This is rock bottom, right? I mean,
for me, for the
radio
show,
not even close. We've had way worse.
Yeah,
are we sure not talking about cat sick after the Suns loss is not rock bottom radio for Josh?
For me, maybe. No, I would say that talking about Izzy in any sense is actually like keeping us afloat right now. I think that. If we would have gone straight from Suns talk into, you know, more of why the Royals fired their hitting coach, like that would have probably been hour one, might have been rock bottom for me, actually.
On the bright side, I feel like I hit rock bottom a long, long time ago. So
only
just waiting,
from here.
Just waiting for you guys to join me.
Well, I mean, I got a shovel. Rudy, the nod that Rudy just gave is also a lot. I don't know. Matt, hold on here. Rudy, do you want to tell the first story from your weekend on the radio at any point?
It feels like a lot to tell.
It's not.
Yeah, it feels like too much.
Do you want to give a very Cliff's Notes version of it?
It's a very, very sad pet story that involves a moving vehicle.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's too much to like tell on the radio.
It's rough. And so I just was... I could have asked that question off air, too.
Probably.
Would have been fine.
Maybe like one day.
Yeah.
Feels a little too soon.
Yeah, that's fine.
Not my pet, I should say, but family member's pet.
There was a bad pet story. And so, there's just a lot going on around here, Matt. And we've got now we've got Izzy just being, you know, just being a treat in the background. So again, I think that the grand scope of how quickly we're digging to rock bottom. I mean, if you beat us there, it's not by that much. We're just still working.
Oh, this has just been a heartbreaking beginning to the show. And so you know what? Whatever it is, your pet, your loved one, just give him a hug tonight.
That's a good message. Thank you, Matt. Unfortunately, I don't think that I can get to Devin Booker before the night is up, so I'll probably just have to come up with something else, because even game seven,
definitely
I guess.
Definitely needs a hug.
Clearly. And I look, man, Book, you need a shoulder to cry on. You know, I'll be there. You'd let me know.
Did you see I forgot about this. This is not a Chiefs thing, but the Stephen A. Smith tweeted at Devin Booker, but it was not the Suns' Devin Booker.
Awesome.
There is a Devin Booker who plays professional basketball overseas. He's like, I'm sorry, man. I was in Istanbul playing a game. I'll be there next time, though. I promise.
He literally didn't show up.
Yeah, there's
that
Devin Booker. Devin Booker, 31, is a professional basketball player, but plays overseas.
Wow. So how has your week gone other than that, Matt? Any good thing that we can talk about for literally 2 minutes before we talk about Melvin Ingram or whatever?
No, I got nothing good for you, no. I mean, we could talk about Melvin Ingram going to the Dolphins. That's not good for anybody, is it?
Did you eat any good food over the weekend, or like, I don't know, watch a good movie or watch any television?
Let's see. I made flautas and quesadillas
there
last night for dinner.
Good, delicious.
That was pretty good. Those turned out pretty well. I was pretty pleased with everything because you really can't go wrong with tortillas, chicken, cheese, and a fryer. You know.
So I'm thinking here now, I have seen flautas on a menu before. I'm sure I've eaten flautas at some point. I don't know that I could describe it back to myself right now, though. So what's your flauta structure?
My flauta structure is very, very simple. I take both corn and flour, make them both.
Ooh.
So we got a little yellow corn and a little, you know, white flour tortilla. And then I take some chicken that I have pan seared with a little chili powder, a little lemon juice. And then I shred it with my mixer, my most valuable possession, my KitchenAid stand mixer. If you do not have a KitchenAid stand mixer, you can't cook.
You shred the chicken in the mixer?
Exactly.
What attachment are you working with there?
It's got the paddle, so you can just throw the chicken breast in there after you've let them rest a little bit, throw them in the bowl with the paddle and let it just, you know, grind away for about 30 seconds, 45 seconds.
Huh!
And you get shredded chicken.
There you go. Okay, so there we go. See, we got a little food kitchen hack. And we can move on to whatever, football stuff in a second. That's great. Also, I've definitely had flautas before. Renee made these not terribly long ago. They're just, it's basically like if you had a whole plate of taquitos, right? Like more or less.
Exactly.
That,
yeah. You put them in put the chicken in the tortilla, you wrap it up, you drop them in some whole oil to fry them up.
The shredded chicken in the mixer, in the stand mixer hack, if you will, that's a good one. All right, so this segment and really this show hasn't been a total loss because we at least gave that to some people.
And I only learned that because, and I should have known it because, I mean, you know, I love my KitchenAid stand mixer, so I should have known for years that I could have done that. But I learned it about, I don't know, 10 years ago when Nancy was watching the KitchenAid stand mixer on, like, the Home Shopping Network.
Incredible.
A show where they have David, the chef or what, chef whatever, with like his catchphrase is always like, shut the back door, or front door, or whatever it is. And they were filling the stand mixers, and then they were throwing some chicken breast in there to shred it. And I was like, I have to go make some shredded chicken breast right now.
So I have visualized this process accurately. Like, I don't feel like I'm missing anything. I'm looking at pictures now. I just Googled shred chicken and stand mixer, and I'm seeing that people have used the attachment that I thought you were describing. I'm just having a very difficult time envisioning this process from start to finish. It seems insane that this would work, but it seems like it works. So there you go. That's great. I'm glad that we covered that. So if you want to talk about how the Chiefs might be starting a stand mixer at defensive end this year, now we can.
That might actually be on the depth chart right now.
Yeah.
I would actually probably put it on there.
So a few steps to this year. When you got the news, I think you had one of the very first tweets that I saw about it whenever that news did come down. rank your level of like surprise. I love making you give us numbers. I don't do this with every guest, by the way. I don't know why I keep doing it to you. Don't, you know what? Don't rank it. Tell me with your words and not numbers. Tell me with your words how surprised you were whenever that signing with Miami came down. Because obviously we've talked about the unrestricted free agent tag the Chiefs put on him. Now we find out today that his salary with the Dolphins is $5 million, where the tag the Chiefs put on him would have been for 4.4. I don't know. I got follow-ups to that, but just walk me through your level of surprise when that news came through.
I'll do both. I will say that I was 80% flabbergasted.
I love it. I love it.
Not enough that you could have knocked me over with a feather, but still very, very surprised. I mean, the Chiefs certainly seemed very interested in bringing him back, and I think the tag speaks for itself. I mean, they were obviously willing to, exactly what you said, offer him pretty close to what he signed with for the Dolphins. So I'm left to conclude that there's some other reason why, that Melvin Ingram is with the Dolphins and not the Chiefs, because if it's about, I think, winning a Super Bowl, I think he's got a better chance of doing that in Kansas City. But if he wants more playing time, if he wants to be a little bit more of a leader and an alpha in the locker room, if he doesn't want to have to pay state state income tax, and let's not forget, I mean, that is actually something that players do consider, that if they got a $5 million offer in Miami and they got a $4.5 million offer somewhere else, that $5 million in Miami looks even better. So, we're speculating, but it certainly seems like that there were other factors other than just winning that was a determining factor in this. And maybe Melvin Ingram never wanted to come back to Kansas City. I mean, we don't know. Let's find out what he has to say. But I think the Chiefs were probably a little surprised, too. But the fact that they kind of covered their bases a bit with the tag, I think tells you that, hey, they – at least we're playing the odds that if he decides to sign somewhere else, that, hey, they put themselves in line for some compensation if he did. So they got the best of both worlds, but I think the world that they would have rather have had was Melvin Ingram in Kansas City.
Well, so my next follow-up was going to be, why did this happen? As you've just laid out, we don't really know, I guess. I will say I just pulled up an income tax calculator in the state of Missouri, and on $5 million, the income taxes there would be about $2.2 million. So basically, he's getting nearly $3 million in pocket, I guess, more by going to Miami. You could do your math on, rent or whatever, but whatever he's buying in Miami. Maybe he just wants to be in Florida, whatever. But like you said, there are lots of elements there. My question, I guess, that would be the most Chiefs-centric is, why is $4.5 million where they drew their line in the sand, if you think that is true, or why are we here now where, once again, like, Melvin Ingram was the only next real step, and alternatively they're going to bring back Alex Okafor for another 1 year deal? Like, what level of penny pinching is worth it to downgrade from Melvin Ingram to whoever would be up next?
Well, I mean, I think you kind of hit it there, which is, what would have been the magic number that would have gotten Melvin Ingram to Kansas City? Clearly, it wasn't $5 million. I mean, I think that's probably, I would have thought that would have probably been about what the Chiefs' ceiling was. And clearly, hey, they at least felt like the tag was either a floor or a ceiling, one or the other. The tender offer, what it would have been. So I think that tells you a little bit. I mean, the Chiefs were willing to spend a little bit on Melvin Ingram, but what was the magic number? I mean, and what would they have had to get to? I mean, is Melvin telling us that to come to Kansas City, he would have had to take 7 or 8?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I mean, I think for the Chiefs, looking at, even what he gave them last year, which was a nice contribution, was it worth $8 million? I don't think so. So, I mean, I think you can clearly kind of, put it at least in that perspective. And then you look at, where they are with the cap and some other things that maybe they want to do and what they want to be prepared for. I mean, yeah, you do have to draw the line somewhere. And you just can't, I mean, if you just let the line go loosey-goosey with everybody, then where are you going to be? I mean, okay, you just gave Melvin Ingram maybe $2 or $3 million more than you wanted to. You could have kept Tyreek Hill, if you gave him, you know, $5 million more a year than maybe you wanted to. You go on down the list, and suddenly, I mean, you get into some real cap problems. So you got to draw the line somewhere. And clearly the Chiefs were a little bit at that point as far as, you know, where they are at in the cap process and everything. Now, nobody, I mean, the Dolphins at $5 million, probably about the most money that was out there. I mean, it wasn't like you were bidding a crumb against the rest of the league. It was a relatively small pool. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, once again, it comes down to what the player wants. And if the player wants to be in Miami, and kind of like Tyreek Hill, if Tyreek Hill wants to be in Miami, not a whole lot the Chiefs can do about it.
Yeah. Well, so on that note, like I certainly don't disagree with the idea that you've got to eventually you got to put a line somewhere. What's confusing to me is that for Ingram in particular, like he was the last unknown. Like he was the last piece to step in line next, right? Like where I don't know what else they're going to do for this particular rotation. And also, yeah, I don't think that 2022 Melvin Ingram would necessarily be worth $8 or $9 million in a vacuum. But the Chiefs are in a very particular spot right now where I have to pull up the snap counts and everything again. But they're going to have four or five guys play a lot of snaps at edge. One of them is a rookie in George Karlaftis. One of them has had injury issues his entire time in Kansas City and also some production issues when he's even been on the field in Frank Clark. Contract year and all of that. Truly, we'll find out if that's undefeated. This will be a good test for it, I think. But then you've got Mike Dana, who is like the quintessential, I think, perfectly fine average edge. And then Josh Kando, who, no offense, I think that draft pick made sense logically, but he has not been an effective pass rusher since high school. This group is not deep nor top heavy. It's just not very good right now unless you have incredible expectations for Karlaftis straight out of the gate and Frank Clark at this point in his career.
I mean, and what else do you have on the roster? I mean, you know, the Chiefs do have Malik Herring.
Mm-hmm. That hype train better get choo-choo, mother bleeper. That minicamp hype train better get up to speed fast.
Exactly. I mean, you're placing if the Chiefs go into training camp with the roster they have right now. I mean, one, I think they're telling you that they got a lot of confidence in Malik Herring.
God, it's May, man. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Keep interrupting you, but boy.
No, you're absolutely entitled. No, I mean, oof. Do not allow anything that happens in May to get you excited. So, no, I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, it, you know, that's what I have to say. There you go.
You're right. It's just that. I feel like I'm Roadrunner feet spinning right now. I can't get any traction because I just keep looking at this list and thinking, I like George Karlaftis. I bet he plays a ton of snaps, and I bet that he doesn't look totally overmatched most of the season. It's also really... I can feel myself getting to this take across the team altogether. You can also get beyond edge if you want to mention Sky Moore. I think I'm probably going to be the person who is talking about lowering expectations on this rookie class immediately, particularly Sky Moore, just because being a rookie receiver in Andy Reid's system is really hard. But even for Karlaftis, like, are people expecting him to be, like, not just rookie TJ or JJ Watt, but one of the Watts at their peak? Like, I don't know. Are people expecting him to be literally Hercules and play 100 snaps or 100% of the snaps and be dominant in that pattern? Like, I don't know, man. It's just the group is not better off than it, as much better off as it needed to be by this point. I think that's pretty clear.
I think that's pretty clear. I mean, now you can look at it a couple of different ways. I mean, one, you know, here's a crazy thought. Is the Chiefs defensive end position group right now in a better position than it was a year ago right now? Remember, a year ago right now, they didn't have Melvin Ingram.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Jones was pretty much, you had a feeling, was going to be playing a lot of edge. I mean, we weren't even really to the point where you got into the OTA is when that talk really took off and mm-hmm. everything. But, I mean, you know what? I think I could make the case that with Karlaftis alone, they're at least better than they were a year ago at that spot.
I would
you know
agree.
What?
Yes.
A year ago, you were also petrified yep. at the edge position.
But also, it was a nightmare, and then they spent a sixth-round pick to go get a guy that they tried to sign in the preseason, and it's happening
yeah.
again.
And that's the thing that I actually find a little perplexing about this whole offseason, because even if we go back to the combine and talking to Brett Veach, and you know, even what he kind of said throughout the draft too, as well, and at post draft and everything, there's been a kind of a consensus, you know, message at least, which has been that I think that everyone else outside one Arrowhead Drive has been a lot more panicked about the defensive end position than inside one Arrowhead Drive. I mean, because last year, you know, I mean, that was even the conversation, was that, you know, the Chiefs really got taken advantage of with their offensive line. They had to go out and rebuild it, and they rebuilt it in a single offseason. And then there was the conventional wisdom this year was that, you know what, Chiefs are going to do the exact same thing on the defensive side. They're going to rebuild that defensive line because that's where a lot of their problems last year defensively really stemmed from, was not being able to get after the quarterback, not being able to win at the line of scrimmage. And they didn't take the same approach. And I mean, and Brett Veach has even told us as much. That was not their off-season strategy, was not to do that. So, I mean, at one point, I mean, you can kind of say that the Chiefs have kind of fulfilled their defensive plan this offseason, because rebuilding the edge spot was never really the first and foremost as part of their plan. Their plan was to go after some other positions first, and they did that. But you're right. I mean, now you're left with the, well, who is going to play that edge position? Who is going to give you the snaps? Because right now you're depending on a rookie and a guy that has had injury and production issues in Kansas City.
Yeah, because like, I think all of that is right to say, hey, like, we did all this last year, and we did. But here's where I get stuck after that. Because, look, I generally think Brett Veach does a good job, and I also have – I don't think I have ever been the guy who's, like, in hysterics because the Chiefs didn't sign a veteran role player for $5 million for a one-year deal. Like, that – guys have come and gone that have bothered me significantly less than this particular one bothers me a little bit, and bothers is even maybe a strong word. But here's where I would look back at you saying, hey, you know, we had this conversation last year. We were right. We were right last year. Like, the Chiefs got that one wrong. Chris Jones on the edge was a failed experiment. He moved back into the inside. They then go trade for Melvin Ingram, who is the only player who sacked Joe Burrow in the AFC Championship game behind a famously horrid offensive line. Like, the pass rush, if there's a lot of ways the season could have gone differently, all of that. But if the Chiefs would have had a merely average pass rush, they're at least in the Super Bowl. Like, I legitimately do believe that. That ends up being a huge tipping point, because if they could just punish Joe Burrow there, and look, Jamar Chase was still going to be Jamar Chase, and certainly no certainty. But that was a glaring issue all year long, and then into the playoffs, into the AFC Championship game, and you're right. George Karlaftis alone puts them in a better spot than they were, I think, at this point a year ago. But also, halfway through the season a year ago, they said, oh, bleep, we really do need to add something here. And then that guy left.
Yeah. And, I mean, and this is the point that you hear inside the Chiefs a lot, which is that, you know what, the pass rush last year, it wasn't as bad as a lot of people think, because they were getting pressure, they were getting hurries. Maybe they just weren't all turning into sacks, and that sometimes that's just bad luck, that eventually that kind of stuff is going to turn into sacks. Well, you know, I can buy that to a degree, but then the only concern I have with that is that the player that you are probably counting on the most to increase your pass rush this year is also a guy who doesn't have a lot of production as far as sacks go, and does just get a lot of pressure, and didn't have a lot of those translate into sacks last year. So, you know, are you just really betting that the pass rush is going to be better this year based on a reversion to the mean, that you're going to get more sacks this year because you're just going to get luckier? I mean, that's kind of where you're at this point. And you know, and once again, I mean, maybe the Chiefs are just putting on a brave face. Maybe they feel just as terrified as the rest of, you know, the Chiefs fans out there. Then maybe they're in, but they're just putting on a brave face, and they just know that it was going to be difficult to impossible to rebuild the pass rush this season. They got the edge rusher that maybe they wanted in the draft, but what else were they going to do? I mean, was there really an impact player that you felt, and we've been talking about this, was there ever an impact rusher on the free agent market this year that you felt comfortable giving the money that they got this offseason?
No, I don't think so. No, yeah.
No.
And that again, like, and this is not, I don't mean to just keep going over this same ground, but it's just that ends up being the price that you pay for Frank Clark and Breland Speaks. Because if either of those guys are who you thought they were going to be, this room looks very different right now. And you add George Karlaftis to either, you know, prime Frank Clark or rounding into form Breland Speaks, and everything looks different. But there are just consequences to getting moves wrong, and that's just where we're at now. Here's the crazy thing, Matt. I'm not sure the Chiefs have made a misstep this offseason to the point about how much you pay Melvin Ingram. I am not here to be critical of the Chiefs on this one, but I am wanting to shine a flashlight on it and say I'm pretty sure that this crack in the foundation might be something that we are talking about in December, you know?
Well, I mean, and that's absolutely it, because, I mean, we're talking, and I mean, let's be big picture. What are we talking about here? We are nitpicking a roster that I think everybody feels like is still an AFC contender, that is still a team that's got should have Super Bowl aspirations. And what we're talking about is, you know, what could be keeping them from doing exactly that, from winning the AFC again, getting into an AFC championship game, hosting a fifth one in a row, you know, trying to get to another Super Bowl. What could hold them back? And I look at the defensive side of the football, and yeah, I mean, the pass rush is probably the one thing that, if we're talking in February about this team didn't get to the Super Bowl or didn't win it, that's probably the one thing that we're nitpicking is probably the thing that's going to keep them from getting there. But as you said, I mean, could they have done anything else this offseason to have improved it significantly? I'm not sure. And I think that's probably why, you know, Brett Veach's strategy, at least, seemed to be going into this offseason was to make an incremental improvement, to fix what they could with the pass rush, but address the other things that they felt like that they could shore up. Because let's face it, I mean, they shored up the linebacker spot, they've shored up corner, they've shored up safety. I mean, and those were all manageable. But once again, here we are sitting here thinking, is there anything else that they could have done to make the pass rush better? I mean, could they have signed Von Miller? Sure, but would that have made them better, or would that have just been maybe another Frank Clark, you know, disaster looming?
Right.
Because, you know, the guy's 33 years old. I mean, there were no safe bets in free agency. And you're right. I mean, that's the price you do pay for getting a couple of decisions that don't go your way. And now the Chiefs would tell you that, hey, Frank Clark went their way because they won a Super Bowl. So that worked out.
Right, but they probably don't make that Frank Clark trade if Breland Speaks is, you know, looking shot out of a cannon, and so their pick of Breland Speaks ultimately aligned the stars in a way. So I know that's another degree removed and a little bit silly, but you know, whatever. We don't have to split hairs on Frank Clark in 2019, but as we stand right now, it's just, yeah, it's very interesting to me. You also mentioned that within the building, we assume that the pass rush is not viewed as dire of a thing as it looks like from the outside. And so, like, to get some stats that are more indicative of what the entire pass rush looks like, again, there is stuff here where I'm about to say something after I give you all these numbers, Matt, that is going to sound ridiculous coming out of my mouth, because it's going to sound like a Troy Aikman take. And it's really, I guess that's just where I'm at. So the Chiefs last year were third in hurry percentage, fifth in pressure percentage, while being eighth in blitz percentage. So, you know, they're blitzing a lot, but they're still getting there at a very good rate in terms of affecting the quarterback. And yet they were 29th in sacks. I know that there is a randomness to sacks. I know that if you were to say, hey, you get one of these traits that you can just sort of look at and try to gauge how this was as a unit, you might look at hurries or pressures or whatever. Here's my Shannon Sharp take, okay, we're on Undisputed. At some point, you got to bring down the quarterback. Like, you got to hit him. You got to pull him down, because that's where you actually end the possession. I don't know what the logic of all of the what the logic beyond these percentage stats might end up being, but whenever you're going up against elite quarterbacks, hurrying them might not be that big of a deal. Rushing Joe Burrow, if he's going to just get the ball to Jamar Chase anyway, you know, it doesn't really matter. Does hurrying Tom Brady matter all that much if you're hurrying him after he knows where he's going with the ball? Like, that is something that I do think is worth noting, right? Like, it's not like they haven't been impacting quarterbacks, but they, while impacting quarterbacks, were still letting these guys, you know, complete passes. passes to their favorite aliens running down the sideline, and they're like just not getting home. I would imagine that there is not a disparity anywhere else in the league last year between teams that were hurrying or even or officially pressuring the quarterback with a sack ratio so incredibly far from where that hurry percentage would lead them.
And I'm not sure who I am channeling when I ask this question and make this observation, but it's also going to be one of those things I'm sure that somebody's going to say, this guy is such an effing idiot. You know what? I look around the league, and I certainly look at how teams played the Chiefs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I wonder at times, what is the benefit of hurrying the quarterback in today's NFL? Because I see, you know, teams no longer have any interest whatsoever in hurrying Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, yeah.
Their plan on Patrick Mahomes is to drop as many guys back in coverage and let him have all the time in the world to throw, just as long as there's nobody open.
Right.
And you know, and we're kind of obsessing over this and everything. And everywhere, I'm not sure that, especially in the AFC of all places, that hurrying the quarterback amounts to anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're right. I mean, you know, it's either you, and this is probably the best way to put it, is just that you've got to be able to get to the quarterback with four or fewer rushers.
Yeah.
And if you can't, then don't bother.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're better off against the Josh Allens of the world and the clearly, I think, the Herberts of the world and the Burrows of the world. You are better off playing defense and trying to stop them from, you know, completing a pass than you are to hurrying them, because as the rest of the league are figured out with Mahomes, the more you hurry them, the better he gets.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be guys open. These guys can make too quick decisions and their arms are too good. Maybe in the NFC, you know, you can still play that kind of football because the quarterbacks are terrible. But in the AFC, I'm seriously questioning, what is the value of hurrying these guys?
I'm asking that question with you, not in the way of what's the point, but in the way of like, hey, this is a question I'd love to see as the abstract in a research paper. You know, like I would legitimately like to know what that difference looks like. Also looking at pass rush win rate from last year for the Chiefs or for the entire NFL, the Chiefs as a pass rush unit are at 44%. I am looking to see if they're... I would love to get just edge rushers on this. I will tell you that as a defensive tackle, Chris Jones is only behind Aaron Donald in defensive tackle pass rush win rate, and there is certainly no Chief in the top 10 among edges. So I would need another level of zooming in with the microscope on this one, I suppose. But it's also one of those times where, like, hey, is it okay to just also admit that when you've watched the Chiefs play football last year, that it didn't seem like they were doing much to the quarterback? And I think most of us would go, oh, yeah, no, that's definitely true. I wish I had a better grasp on why what is happening is happening.
Yeah, and I wish I just had a better grasp over, and I don't mean this sarcastically, it's going to come out that way, it's just, you know, what the Chiefs plan for is this year.
Yeah.
You know, if they are just, you know, if they're just taking a different approach this season, that they're building the defense differently because Steve Spagnuolo's got a different idea, a different plan for this year for how to tackle things. I mean, give Spagnuolo credit. I mean, I think he does as good a job, if not a better job, than almost any other defensive coordinator in the league to catering what he does to the talent around him.
Mm.
Because there are, to me, a lot of other defensive coordinators around the league that they will take those square pegs and shove them in the round holes. They do what they do, and if the guys that they have can't do what they do it anyway. Whereas at least Spags does, a really good job of taking, you know, the talents of the people that he has and figuring out how to best use them. So, I mean, Chiefs defense is going to be different this year. How is it going to be different? I mean, that's kind of, I think, the magic question to all this. I mean, maybe we're just underrating Karloftis. Maybe he alone, you know, you put him on a line and all of a sudden with a Chris Jones who, you look at the success that he's having. I mean, you're talking about his win rate. It's not like he's got single coverage all the time. The guy's getting double teamed all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you put in another guy like Karloftis out there, maybe that is just the one piece that you needed. You just needed that other impact player because Chiefs didn't really have – I mean, if Karloftis is everything that we think that he is, then he's better than anybody they had on the team rushing going after quarterback last year from the end spot.
Yeah. I am relatively bullish, I think, on Karloftis. I am extremely in the Chris Jones camp. I just it takes more than two, and I am very, very curious to see what that rotation ultimately looks like. But the most important thing is that we did get from Izzy hacking up a hairball in the background all the way into like 25 serious minutes about the Chiefs pass rush. So frankly, I have to think that pretty much every customer leaves this show tonight satisfied.
And if you'd like an update, Izzy is now laying on my knee with her hanging down her paws and everything off the side of my leg, after having shedded what appears to be most of a cat on my shirt.
Oh, man. I think I made this point last Friday. I've had good experiences with cats in my life. I have had a couple of friends with cats who I've gotten along with, but I am deathly allergic to them, as is Renee, and I hate pet fur shedding. So I just think I'm going to continue to, you know, follow Izzy on Twitter and appreciate her vicariously through you.
I do need to post a video of her the other day watching mice videos on YouTube.
Excellent.
And trying to attack the TV.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Please. Yes, please do that. There you go. Here's another way to tell people to follow at Matt Derrick on Twitter. You can watch Izzy try to get virtual mice on the television at some point. That right there. All of a sudden, Phoenix shuns schmuns. Who cares? I got Izzy trying to catch virtual mice. That's turned my week around. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, guys. Take care, everybody.
Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. Do follow him on Twitter, at Matt Derrick. Check out his work at ChiefsDigest.com and prepare for a really, truly excellent cat video somewhere in the near future.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
And Sammy Watkins practiced today. Dee Ford practiced today. Eric Berry practiced today. Just kidding, he didn't. He's never going to practice.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Matt Derrick. Follow him on Twitter for cat videos and Chiefs news and Chiefs analysis. I want to talk a little bit more about Ingram and where the Chiefs are left now in terms of their edge rushers. Again, like this is the line that's difficult to walk because I think usually whenever we talk about a particular issue in a transactional roster building sense, you usually say it with a solution, or you point out a problem and give a solution, you're helping. You point out a problem, give no solution, you're just complaining, right? Like, that's sort of, I don't like just complaining with no other thought process in mind. But in this case, and again, I'm not even like, I'm not trying to relitigate the Breland Speaks or Frank Clark draft, or the Breland Speaks pick or the Frank Clark trade. This is just the place the Chiefs have found themselves, and you know this from any number of things, but following one arguably desperate move with another arguably desperate move, if those things don't work out, you only end up paying that debt two or threefold after that. I am currently thinking about the Kansas football coaching cycle that has recently been ongoing for the last decade or so. That sort of phrase of, you know, paying for a mistake, making another mistake, and then making another mistake. You're only two bad hires away or something like that from totally tanking your program. For the Chiefs here, Karloftis has to at least be good, because if he ends up just being, and honestly, again, I keep using Mike Danick, I just think he's like a perfect watermark for totally not overmatched on the field, but not going to pop off the screen positively or negatively. That guy's valuable. But if George Karloftis is merely Mike Dana, the Chiefs are in trouble again next year and again the year after that. I don't think they made a mistake by not spending big on a veteran edge rusher. I certainly don't think they needed to trade for one. I think that would have been a real misstep. I don't think they made a mistake drafting George Karloftis at 30. I think that pick at that spot made sense. They could have whenever they moved up, they could have moved up for Jermaine Johnson, I guess. I'm not really relitigating that in particular. And if it would have taken $8 million for Melvin Ingram because he's getting that sales tax or that income tax boost by being in Florida, then maybe it shouldn't have been that either. I'm not sure the Chiefs have made a misstep at this position in 2022, but I am telling you that I'm looking at the result, and the result is George Karloftis, Mike Dana, Malik Herring on the left side, and Frank Clark, Joshua Kando, and Austin Edwards on the right side. I don't know how you can think that is a like championship caliber edge rush group. And, you know, Matt made this point, rightfully so. The Chiefs still have all these Super Bowl expectations, but that's because of their quarterback. I mean, if you took this roster, if you took all the AFC West and you made their quarterbacks all Derek Carr, or you made them all Patrick Mahomes, honestly, I don't have my ranking for you off the top of my head of rosters minus quarterbacks. One team still has Travis Kelce on it, right? Andy Reid helps, but he's not a roster move. The Travis Kelce's been a Chief for long enough that that's not a roster move for this administration. And again, I largely like what the Chiefs have done under Veach. I really like this draft class. This is just a really, 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 really important position for your bets to be that George Karloftis is great as a rookie, that Frank Clark is healthy and productive for really the first consistent season in Kansas City, and then that Mike Dana is going to be somebody who can play 50% of your snaps, that Malik Herring and Joshua Kando, that at least one of those two is going to be able to play another 40% of your snaps. It makes me nervous, man.
And think about this pass rush. If Frank Clark became essentially the player that they thought they were acquiring, right?
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Like, right, now, all of a sudden, if Frank Clark is the Frank Clark we saw in the playoffs, or like we've seen for stretches, but he is that all the time, it's amazing how that one thing can change the entire way the room looks, right? There's still a little bit of a lack of depth there, but it's a lot different when you have a 14-sack guy at the top, yep, with a first-round pick on the opposite side. But that's part of it, right? They gave up a first-round pick for Frank Clark. Now, I remember Seattle literally drafted a defensive end with that first-round pick, mm-hmm, Collier from TCU.
LJ Collier, yeah.
He's been bad. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there was a defensive end there at 30 the Chiefs could draft. But the point being, like, there is a pick that you missed out on,
yep,
a player that you missed out on, and a lot of money that you spent that maybe, you know, there's another defensive end in free agency that gets that money. Maybe it's a way to have the roster kind of look like what it is with Tyreek Hill. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there, yeah, it costs you a lot of things. And you need Frank Clark to hit. Mm-hmm. And like this defensive line really needs Frank Clark to look like the player we've seen at times. Doesn't have to look like it for, you know, 20 games. Kind of needs to look like it for 16 or 17 games, right? Yeah. Like you're allowed off games, right? It's the NFL, man. It's hard. Some days you're just gonna be a little bad. Some days, you're just gonna go up against really good offensive tackles. It happens, man. This front really needs Frank Clark to consistently be what he is, or for Karloftis to, you know, I mean, even surprise us by a rookie standard, right? Because you don't expect the 30th overall pick to come in day one and be a star. It can't happen.
But it's unfair to do that, yes.
And you shouldn't.
Right.
And they need one of those two guys, and it's more fair to expect Frank Clark because he's the $100 million man, right? Like, yep, like he's the guy who you gave up the first-round pick for. He's the guy who gave all the money for. He's the veteran who has shown flashes of it in the NFL. And you just hope that it's, you know, that he, I guess, looks at this more like, hey, contract year, and contracts never, you know, contract year's undefeated. Because, mm-hmm, you could argue last year was a contract year, and you could argue that last year, contract year lost. But, you know, maybe this is the real contract
year. Another contract year. The Chiefs, by the way, are 25th in spending for edge rushers on their roster right now in total salary cap space compared to the rest of the league spending at edge. The Chiefs are doing that with 10 edge rushers on their roster. There are some teams behind them that have fewer players, and that's a positionally it might even be lower than that.
It feels surprising just based off the value that they put in that position in the past, but then you just remember that right now, besides Frank Clark, it is a lot of young,
yes,
cost-effective guys, which is great. I'm all for that. It is just weird hearing the defensive line, just at any spot on the defensive line in general, not be in the top 10, because that just seems to be what they value so much
100%.
On that defense. But again, there have been players that have cycled in and out, and I do like that the one out of all of this, right, the Chiefs have had a lot of guys kind of play defensive end, and the one guy who's probably turned out to be good, who maybe like they just maybe should have put more thought into re-signing, I don't know how that all would have worked out, maybe Ogba has been pretty freaking good.
Yep.
And I think we probably both had the same thought of, hey, he's the situational third pass rusher. They can find this guy. He's replaceable. You don't give him the money. Well, they've struggled to find that guy. And Mini Ogba has went to Miami and just kind of been a pretty good player.
Yeah. And also,
a lot of our players are going to Miami.
A lot of Miami guys.
I get it. Miami seems fun if you're in your 20s and rich.
Here's one other thing that we probably should have mentioned with Matt, and I'll mention now so we have this on the record whenever it actually happens. It was Emmanuel Ogba. It was Taco Charlton. Some veteran pass rusher with a sort of movable but sort of unpleasant contract is going to get cut in roster cut downs, and the Chiefs will bring somebody in. And if they do that successfully and it ends up adding a competent player to this rotation, that's great. Sometimes those guys are Emmanuel Ogba. Sometimes they're Taco Charlton. Both those guys really kind of had their runs cut short by injury. Sometimes they're Morris Claiborne. Obviously, different position, but like Mo Claiborne did not solve anything.
Or like Trail Suggs, who was a really cool name. And I feel like had a moment or two, but overall wasn't like much. Sometimes Melvin Ingram, it's good value.
Right. There is a vast number of ways that those moves can go. The Chiefs will bring in one of them, and then we'll see. But yeah, right now, again, this isn't one of those things where it's like, how could you be so stupid and mess up this terribly? Melvin Ingram was the difference in this team being good and bad. It just has reminded me to look back at this edge group right now and see some sort of scary things. But, you know. The team has Patrick Mahomes, so it's not like you lost in Game 7 to somebody who vaguely looks like you. It could always be worse.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
So which teams need a downhill? Oh, God, I can feel an ulcer forming.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I personally had a bad basketball weekend, but the basketball was not bad all weekend. In fact, I'll make this our brief praising of the Eastern Conference teams that have advanced. Look, I mean, you know, RIP Beards, but the Celtics are, of course, Beards' team. I say is because now and forevermore and in the past and for all time. But the Celtics, particularly Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum has been on an absolute heater in this series against the Bucks. Obviously, they won Game 7, and then the Heat's run over the 76ers, and what they're bringing to the table right now is incredibly interesting. I can't wait for this Eastern Conference matchup, and so if I can do this, I'm going to give both the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics the ring. They're Who Gets the Ring, brought to you by Rubak Fine Jewelry, because I'm really hoping that one of them gets the ring. I'm rooting for the Eastern Conference from here on out. Rubak is, of course, that's where I went whenever it was time for me to get my engagement ring for fiancé Renee. We got a custom piece. It's beautiful, and they've been serving in the Kansas City community for more than 100 years at Rubak. Custom ring means a custom budget. You get Hal on your side. He's got decades of experience in the industry, and he will help you create the most beautiful piece that fits your budget, fits your desires, fits your needs, whatever it is that you want. Rubak is the place that I would send you 100 times out of 100 to get that done. You want to make your appointment with Rubak Fine Jewelry now? Do it by visiting them online at rubak.co. That's rubak.co. I am hoping that one of those two Eastern Conference teams gets the ring, because I don't think I could watch Luka keep winning.